This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And here we are, yet another week of fantastic, well, I don't know if it's fantastic weather for gardening. It's always great weather for gardening, right?
It's good weather for gardening. It is indeed.
I'm Igor. With me, as always, is Master Gardener Bob Harris, who was just telling me this is the 30th year that you've been hosting this show.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And was it always the same time, 8:30 Saturday morning?
No. It's changed quite a bit.
Okay.
Over. Yeah.
And you said you first did it with who?
It was a guy called AJ and Maria.
AJ and Maria.
Yeah.
What they would alternate? Different weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. And then we've went through many cast changes. Ann Holiday, of course, was here many years with you. And well, let's continue the tradition.
Okay.
And spread the knowledge of gardening. Our phone lines are always open, 814-368-9372. And we have our email, garden@wesb.com. And we are on Facebook Live as well. So check out facebook.com/WESB1075. And you can see Bob brought in some show and tell. We'll probably get to that a little later.
No, I'd like to start with that.
We're going
to
start with it. All right. Usually it's like a tease. We're looking at these plants like, what are these? So you got some colors here.
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell us about
them. I want to talk about first the petunia. This is a good, what I call, indicator plant.
Hmm.
It's going to indicate whether it's full sun or part sun or even shade. And it's also going to indicate to us whether it's damp out there or dry. So I'll talk a little bit more about each, but an indicator of sunlight. Now, when you buy your petunia, you can see, I'm going to guess here, there's like 20 blossoms on it because it's been grown in a greenhouse in full sun. And when we get it home, we should really pay attention to those. If it's questionable whether it's in sun or not, we should really pay attention to the flower count on it. If this was in partial sun or partial shade, it will start to lose a few blossoms after a week and only end up with maybe 15 or 10 blossoms. That tells us that it's not full sun. And that's still okay. The petunia will still do well. Now, if it's less than partial sun heading towards a shady area within a week or two, there may be hardly any blossoms on it at all, may only be one or two. And that indicates to us that that's not enough sun for this plant. So maybe next time we plant it somewhere else where it gets a little more sun, or we move it if it is in a container already. So it's a good indicator plant. The petunia will tell us a lot. Now, it also, where we maybe start a new bed or plant a new tree, I like to plant something like a petunia right at the base of it, because then every day when I come home from work, I can just look at that petunia. If it's wilted, I know the tree and the petunia needs watered. If it's not wilted, it probably doesn't need watered, and I probably should leave it alone. Because, and you'll hear me say this 100 times, that 90% of most plant failures is due to overwater.
Mm.
So this one can really help us out by telling us whether it needs water or doesn't. Because a petunia reacts quite quickly, because it is a water-loving plant. It reacts quite quickly to, if the soil's dry, it will wilt. And if it wilts a bit, you know, it's not going to really harm it. Once we water, it'll perk right back up, and you'll never know that it did wilt. Matter of fact, sometimes I like to let my plants wilt once in a while just to get that soil dried out, to ensure that the soil is not developing fungus from being too wet or losing all its oxygen in there from being too wet. So once in a while, it is a good idea to let it dry out. And so that's the petunia. Now, the same is going to be for this nice yellow plant here, which is called Biden's. And this is normally a ground cover type plant. It's like the petunia. It'll grow much wider than it does tall. And again, if it stays full of blossoms, it's probably in the right area, full sun. And most annuals are going to enjoy full sun. If it isn't full sun, then you'll see that it doesn't have, it may still be growing well, but it doesn't have as many blossoms as it used to. And that's just telling us that it's not quite enough sun. Now, it can still do well there, but just be aware that there won't be as many blossoms. So those are what I like to call indicator plants. And you can use many different plants as indicator plants. So keep that in mind, because that can be very useful for you.
Indicators for, now, are there any kind of plants or vegetation that you could put those next to that wouldn't necessarily be a good indicator for that particular species?
And the first one that comes to mind is coleus and wax leaf begonias. They perform well in full sun or shade. They just don't care where they live. So they just perform well either place.
So you don't need a indicator plant with those, or a different one?
No, they would not be an indicator plant.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So don't get a, if you're testing to see if it's sun or shade, don't use a begonia, because it doesn't care if it's in the sun or shade.
Gotcha.
And same with coleus too. It just doesn't care whether it's in sun or shade. So I hope that covers that.
Sure.
Can I get into some controversy now?
Uh-oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I hope this makes people think. You know, right, May is what a lot of people are calling no-mow May.
No-mow May.
Yeah, no-mow May. You're supposed to let your grass grow so you can support the pollinators with all the weeds that are going to be in most of our lawns.
Okay.
So I want to even go back further now. Why did we even start having a lawn way back in the beginning, in the early 1800s? It was a monk, Agnes Magnus or something like that.
Agnes Magnus.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't quote him on that.
Yeah, don't quote me on that. I should have wrote it down. He's the one that really started a great gardening book. And everybody relied on it because he was so adept at it, that he explained on how you can make a lawn. And at that time, you would take boiling water to pour on the weeds, and you would just take a tamper, some sort of thing, or just people to trample your lawn down so it wasn't high. Now, and then all of a sudden in 1847, Edwin Bunting came along with a mower, which was really a carpet machine. It was meant to cut all the stray hairs on a carpet to a equal length, but it was converted into a mowing machine, and so people could start mowing their lawn. And why did they mow the lawn? I'm going to be open to arguments with this, you know. So I hope I do get some arguments even. So why did we want to mow our lawn? Number one, to keep pests away from the house.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And there was a lot of pests. I'm talking about bugs, mice, rats, all those pests, wild animals, to keep them away from our house because they don't like short lawn. Another thing is trying to keep that area near our house a little drier, because the taller the lawn would get, the wetter the conditions would be. And our homes don't like moisture. So it was important there. And thirdly, you know, and this is what you'll read in history books, but it's not necessarily the whole truth,
Nothing but the truth.
Yeah. It was for games, lawn games.
Oh.
That's what they'll tell you in the history books. It was for lawn games.
You know, I've read that, or not read, yeah, like I read. I saw on Netflix... documentary once. No, I think it was they said that people wanted to emulate the royal families and the queens.
Oh, that's true.
Beautiful kind of landscaping that they had around
And that's castles. Who started the lawns, the wealthy.
Yeah.
With their lawn games, so history tells us. But it had a lot to do, and maybe more to do, with just trying to keep pests away from our home.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And lawn games, just it was convenient to have lawn games because all of a sudden we were cutting our grass or tromping it down. So,
yeah, all of a sudden you have all this extra usable space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kept a lot of pests away, keeping our lawn down. It kept the moisture down to protect our home. And anyone, especially nowadays, there's more allergies now than there used to be, or at least we're more knowledgeable.
Aware of them. Yeah.
Aware of them. Mm-hmm. So keeping a shorter lawn does keep the allergy system down. Now, I don't have nothing against pollinators. I love pollinators, and I support them every way I can, but not with my lawn. I'm going to plant flowers away from the house. I plant some near the house, too. But I'll have flower gardens, flowering trees and shrubs, all those things. But I still am going to continue to mow my lawn to protect my health and my house's health.
Yes. Now, people say no mow May because they want to grow their weeds and everything for the pollinators.
Yeah.
I got news for you. You cut your grass. Next day, I have weeds again.
Yeah, true.
You know, so that's not going to make a difference.
That's what probably a lot of us have noticed, you know, like the dandelion. That's a neat one.
Absolutely. Yeah, neat. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Call it neat.
They'll grow up. They can grow to be a foot and a half tall. But the very first time you mow it, they stop growing that high. The next time you go out there, you'll see the leaves are creeping across the ground.
Mm.
For some reason, the dandelion has a knowledge of mowers and has learned that, hey, if you're going to cut me, well, I'll just grow real low below the mower height.
Sneaky.
And I can continue to grow.
Sneaky.
And so a lot of people say, well, and my daughter is one, and I hope she's not listening today, that dandelions are great for pollinators. And they are.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need a pollinator. A dandelion's a fascinating plant. It can multiply three different ways. One by a bee exchanging the pollen. Another way is by wind exchanging the pollen. And the third way is it can just pollinate itself and multiply by itself. And that's the last resort it uses. It takes a lot of energy, but it can do that. So the dandelion's going to survive no matter what we do. And
now, I just want to cut in here. I noticed somebody calling the business line on the phones. Make sure you dial the studio line so we could take your phone call at 368-9372. Go ahead.
So I hope this makes you think a little bit. You know, not everybody has to practice the same practice I do, but I'm a firm believer in protecting myself, my family, and my home. I'm going to continue to mow my lawn.
I don't think that's very controversial at all.
Don't you?
I think that, well, you know what? If it was on Facebook, it may be more controversial. Well, people seem to love to argue just for the sake of argument.
There is a large group out there, and it's getting bigger and bigger, where they're trying to let nature come back into the yard by not mowing their lawn at all, turning it all into wildflowers. And that's great. I bless them for all that.
Well, if you can get away with it, if it's away from the house, like you say, you know. Okay.
But for myself, I'm going to continue to mow.
Mm-hmm.
And if I talked about the pest, if that doesn't convince you, if you've ever had a tick on you.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. By not mowing your lawn, the chances are even higher and higher.
And that's a good point, too.
Yeah.
Pets. What about pets?
Yeah. Pet, your dog and cat, too.
They need to be able to navigate around the lawn and do their business.
Yeah. So I just hope that comment makes you think a little bit. Again, you don't have to do it my way. You know, I'm sure your way is fine, too. If you don't want to mow and you want nature to take over, that's great, too. But some of us are going to continue to mow our lawn.
Why not just designate an area for the natural, you know, area?
Exactly.
You know, you can do that.
The ideal thing to do. And a lot of us do that by letting a part of our lawn away from our house, away from where we sit outside, grow up and become wild again. That's fine. I love that idea.
So the people that wanted to do this, it's just for May, though, you're saying? No mow May?
Well, no, some of them continue it, too.
Okay, because yeah. I was going to say, if you're only doing that for May, guess what? In June, you're going to have a heck of a time mowing the lawn then because you let it grow too long. That's another reason why not to.
They do it in May because all the pollinators are just waking up, and they need those flowers to continue their life. By not mowing your lawn, you're helping the pollinator population. I'm going to help them in other ways. And by the way, with pollinators, and I love pollinator gardens. I try to plant pollinator plants as much as I possibly can. A lot of perennials that bloom early and that bloom late so I can support those pollinators. But with pollinators, like butterflies, comes a consequence. At one stage, a butterfly is a caterpillar, and caterpillars eat leaves, a lot of leaves. So just be aware, you know, you got to be tolerant when you're a gardener. So when you see a lot of caterpillars eating all your leaves up on some of your perennials, maybe you just kind of turn your head. Because you are supporting those pollinators. Yeah. They got to go through that stage. So just be aware of that.
Gosh, I remember a few years ago. Remember we had that problem with the little mini caterpillars that were coming down from the trees with the silk or whatever everywhere. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we had a bad,
What were those ones called?
I think those were the tent caterpillars, not the gypsy moth. Or spongy moth, now it's called.
Okay.
But those were the tent caterpillars.
Those things were everywhere.
They were, yep.
Is that like do they return every 7 years or something like that?
Yeah,
or?
there is a cycle to
them. A cycle, but we don't know.
Okay. It's the cycle, nature's cycle of abundance.
Yeah.
Where population grows, and then crashes down, and then the system starts all over again.
We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with a couple emails and even your phone calls at 368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. More gardening show ahead, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. It's B107.5 FM.
It's time to start tackling your springtime projects. That means a few trips to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. You'll find plenty of railroad ties and lumber in stock, blue plastic barrels, and of course all the gardening tools and grass seeds you'll need. Now at Worth W. Smith, check out their new Blackstone griddles. Remember to fill up your propane tanks too. And if you're thinking of getting an air conditioner this summer, get it now while the selection is best. As always, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Yeah, I better talk about what you
We're just looking at an email. Welcome back to the gardening show on B107.5 WESB. And we're looking at an email from last week. And Bob's like, wait a minute. Oh, I know her. So we were talking about rolling the yard last week.
Yeah.
And this is from, who is this?
Susan.
Susan. Yeah. Oh, there she is. Okay. Susan says, some people don't have rollers. A lot of people don't. But she uses her Worth W. Smith ice fishing sled, and she puts stuff in it to be heavy and then, you know, pulls it over the area that should be rolled.
And man, oh man, Susan, that's an excellent idea. I use my sled sometimes when I can't get a wheelbarrow around.
Yeah.
I'm moving a large plant, I can dig it up and put it on that sled, and you'll be surprised, right, you know, how easily you can move a few hundred pounds then.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never even thought of that.
Oh.
A sled, huh?
Yeah, a sled. Okay. So that's a great idea. Yeah. Not everybody has a roller.
I can't believe how much money they can go for.
Yeah.
True. Wow.
But they will. That's one of those things that will last for a lifetime. Plus, I have a roller, but it's from a generation ago.
Yeah.
I didn't have to buy one. And that's how rollers and a lot of garden equipment will last. They'll last for generations. So, yeah, it's an investment. And possibly you have some neighbors that would like to borrow it and so on. But that sled idea, Susan, excellent, excellent idea. Because it is real important when we're sowing that grass seed that we kind of push it into the soil, so it's in real good contact with the soil. That will ensure better germination, so that sled will work as well as a roller.
Somebody else was emailing in. They tried to call and couldn't reach anyone. That's because you called the business line. You got to call 9372, 368-9372. But her question was, well, she just wants to know, she wants you to go over some raised bed techniques. So what's the best way to prepare a raised bed in its third year?
In its third year?
Yeah, and then she has another one after that, I'll ask.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that's assuming that you've got it full of nice soil. Nice dark looking soil. You can tell what nice soil looks like if it's very light colored, like coffee with cream in it. Even when it's wet, then it's probably a lot of clay in it, which that's what we have around here. So you have to add a lot of amendments, you know. And my first one would be peat moss. It helps break up that clay and keep it broken up. But there's compost and leaves and all sorts of other old sawdust. All sorts of other things to amend your soil with. And the more you can amend it, the better off your soil is going to be. And then it'll come to, this might be a little controversy too, to rototilling. I'm still a big, big believer in rototilling. Now, a lot of people are going towards the no-till type of gardening. I like the rototill because I can put my amendments in and mix them up immediately. Now, some people like to just throw them on top and let nature take its course, which it will, but it can take years. But I like to be more of an instant gardener. Mm-hmm. So I rototill. Not only does it mix all those amendments in, it also aerates the soil, loosens it up, so the plant roots can penetrate that area and find more food and more water a lot easier.
We kind of hit on this last week, I remember, because you said after time, you know, the soil loses its nutrients and then you have to add to it and
it
things
does.
Like that. So,
but in her third year, she's not going to have to add a lot of nutrients. You know, it's probably still pretty good, a lot of nutrients in there. But I still would add some compost, old grass clippings, old sawdust, any of those amendments, peat moss that you can think of to keep it healthy.
Okay. Now, the second part of her email, she says, I'm also expanding my garden, and I'm looking to add some prolific vegetables, okay, that yield a lot during the summer. Okay, so what yields a lot during the summer? What kind of veggies can prolific vegetables?
Prolific, yep. boy, and there's a lot of them. Tomato can be very prolific. Squash is super prolific. Cucumbers are very prolific. Mm. Potatoes are very prolific. And I'm mentioning some of them because, like squash and potatoes and cucumbers, because we can harvest them when they're ripe and, not cucumbers, but squash and potatoes. We can harvest them and store them in a cool, dark place, like our basement, maybe a nice corner of the basement. And keep them all the way up till next spring, even.
Wow.
To when we plant again. So that's what I call prolific. I always like to grow some squash. Me and my wife happen to like squash. And they always produce much, much more than we could ever eat. You know, so I store them in the basement. And we can eat them all the way through the winter. As a matter of fact, we had one here a week or two ago yet from last year. So that's a great one. Same with potatoes, too. But remember, potatoes got to be kept in the dark. Otherwise, it's going to start trying to grow. Yeah. So a nice, cool, dark place for those potatoes. But other prolific ones?
Well, you said cucumber. That doesn't keep, though, right?
That doesn't keep. Unless you can it.
Oh.
Or pickle it. Then it will keep for as long as you want it. Another one is beans. Or you can even freeze some of these things, too. Beans and peas, those are very prolific. The list is just going to go on. Peppers can be super prolific. And they're easy to keep all through the year by canning, freezing, or sometimes I like to just cook them and then put them in baggies and then throw them in the freezer. So then when we want to have some for our crock pot, we just pull out a baggie and throw it in.
Already to go.
Yep, it's already cooked and all ready to go. So peppers and let's see, geez, the list is just going to go on. I don't know how many more she wants.
I think
we
got a good idea. Yeah. So if she wants to call up again and then try 368-9372, and we can talk more about it. I think that's a pretty good start.
Yeah. It'd be easier to say what's not prolific.
No, there you go. All right. Well, we have 5 minutes left in the show. What else would you like to talk about today, Bob?
Oh, okay. I just did mention rototilling, so I want to give a hint because I've made this mistake when I was younger. When rototilling a garden bed, doesn't matter if it's vegetable or flower or even lawn, we don't want to over rototill. I know a lot of us like to do that, just run it over and over and over till we got it all mixed up to a fine powder almost. And then it's really easy that first time you plant, you just stick your hand in the soil and plant your plant. That can be a big mistake because the finer the particle through our season with the rain and even us walking on it, it's going to compress down. And of course, then we lose all our airspace, and airspace is also water holding space. So we don't want to till our garden to the point where it's real fluffy. I just like to run one pass, maybe a second pass, and that's it. It may still be a little clumpy, but that's fine as long as those clumps aren't bigger than a golf ball.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Then we're fine.
And the clumps will settle down after it rains a few times and all that stuff. It'll be fine.
So that'd be my hint. Don't over rototill. You're not doing any good. Matter of fact, you're doing much more harm.
Makes sense. Because I was going to say, if it's really super powdery, then it's probably going to like concave in.
It can. You know,
it'll compress down and because all the air is coming out.
Yeah.
Like you say. Yep. Yeah.
And all those particles can then fit together better. And it just compacts down to where there's no water and air holding space.
Yeah.
And even if you don't walk on, if you have a raised bed and you don't walk on it, our rains can even compact it down. So be aware of that finely rototilled mm-hmm. soil can be a problem.
What else is on your list there?
What else? Let's see.
How many notepads did you bring today?
Yeah, two here. I want to talk about some of the hints that I've come up with over the years. A white piece of paper is one of a gardener's best tools.
Mm.
And you probably heard me mention it, where you put a white, if you think there's bugs or some pest on a plant, you can put a white piece of paper underneath, tap the leaves right over the top of that white paper. That'll dislodge a lot of those insects, and that white paper makes it easy to see them. Now, some of the insects, like spider mites, are so small, they're dust particles. So you'll have to just look at the white paper, and if you see dust particles moving around, then you probably have something like spider mites. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make a decision. If I've done that, and I only see 3 or 4, maybe even 6 pieces of dust moving around, telling me that it's spider mites, that's really not a problem yet. But if I start to see almost all the dust particles moving around, then and the plant looking a little ill, then it probably is a problem and we have to do something. And the first thing you can do is a blast with just water from the garden hose. Most of those insects dislodge easily and run out of energy before they can get back up into the part of the plant where they need to feed.
That's so true with the spider mite?
Yeah, okay. With the spider mite.
I was always wondering, like, because they're so small, like, how do you deal with them?
Yeah.
Just give them the hose for a little bit and they'll so won't make it back up. Okay.
Another thing about insects, and this goes again with that, the nature's cycle of abundance. The first insects to show up are going to be beneficial or non-beneficial. They're going to be the ones that harm your plant.
Oh, they're the first to arrive.
Yeah.
The bad ones. Okay.
Yeah. So once a population of the bad insects gets there, if you can hold off, the good beneficial insects will come in and start to feed on them.
Oh.
And it just equals out. So if you can be patient enough, you know, if your plant will allow it, let a few of those bad insects there so that the population of good insects can start to grow and start to do their job. Now, if you see one or two bad insects and you kill it right away, well, now you've just slowed up the population of good insects because there's nothing there for them to feed on.
Okay.
So if you can be patient, nature will take care of itself 90% of the time.
This is just one continuous science experiment.
It is.
That's really neat.
It is indeed.
Okay. With that, we're out of time. It's 9 o'clock. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Another half quick. Hour down. But we've learned a lot. And thanks to everyone who called up and emailed. And of course, now the phone rings, but we're out of time, but we can get to you next week right here on The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith Hardware. And make it a great weekend, Bob. We'll see you next week.
You bet. Thanks.
Okay. B107.5 FM.